Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Leo Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be talking about something which I think is going to be very interesting, and that is the state of the plight and also the joys of being a deskless worker. In South Africa, some of the realities that come with that type of work in a country that is facing the employment crisis that South Africa is facing. What opportunities lie in the space? Is it an area that people should be, you know, perhaps supporting and getting a little bit more into, or is it a space that people should be, you know, perhaps looking to improve a bit more? To give us a sense of what's going on, we are joined by Caroline van der Merwe, who is a co-founder and chief product officer over at GemHR. Caroline, greetings to you.
Thank you, Mudiwe. Thanks for having me.
Caroline, maybe a good jumping off point, right? When we talk about deskless workers, I feel like this warrants a definition of some sort, because if you say deskless worker, I'm in two minds initially. Before I do a proper understanding, my initial, thing that comes to my head is either we're talking about fully remote workers, or we're talking about people that don't necessarily have a fixed place of work at their office place, right? Which of these, if at all, are we talking about?
You've hit the nail on the head with your latter description, Mudiwe. It's essentially anybody that doesn't sit at a desk. So this is the majority of workers in South Africa and the world. So somebody who doesn't sit behind a laptop has completely different work experience to you and I, because it's more difficult to communicate with them. They may have variable workspaces that they go to, and they're definitely not on their phones all day. So if I'm operating a production line at a factory, it's not easy to pop me an email quickly or send me a message. If I'm down a mine shaft every day, it also means my work experience and my communications are different. So the reason why we define this different group of workers is because of those challenges in communicating, but also if you think about training and such. So it could be somebody like a retail worker or somebody in the food service industry even.
So when it comes to something like that then, Caroline, what are some of the realities? Because if we're talking about the majority of workers in South Africa, then is this not the experience of the typical worker? Is that not the state of affairs that we are describing right now?
Absolutely. So it is the vast majority of employees throughout the world. And again, when we define this group of employees, it's very difficult to apply the principles that we learn in HR to people who are desk-based or perhaps called knowledge workers versus deskless workers. And quite often we make sweeping statements in the HR world about the experiences like quiet quitting, for example, which doesn't necessarily apply to these kinds of workers. But employers have to take a vastly different approach to managing these employees. And that means in terms of training them, in terms of making sure that they have the right transport for work, in terms of communicating them. And one of the most exciting findings, I think, about this research is that there's many things that are similar about these employees to you and I. For example, their desire for promotion, their desire for meaningful work and such. But employers do have to approach it from a different perspective because there are vastly different challenges.
All right. One of the key things that I'm then trying to understand is without painting everyone with the same brush. I think you've already warned against that. In a typical sense, right, people would may be tempted to say that we're having a discussion about blue collar work, right? Do you make any distinction, or do you sort of sit and say, okay, fine, this is what we are typically talking about?
So I mean, blue collar is a bit of an outdated term in some senses, because it does also look at this group of employees, which is a massive group, as monolithic. And it's not the case, right? You could have somebody who's very unskilled in this type of work. Sometimes agricultural workers could be classed as relatively unskilled, but right up to a mine worker that has substantial skills and they're at a different earning bracket. So I'm always cautious of grouping people too much together. But what's useful when thinking about deskless workers, again, is looking at what are their transport challenges. They are typically shift workers and hourly workers. So what happens if their shifts change and they have to come to work at a really early hour of the morning versus in the normal 8 a.m. traffic like you or I? And how difficult it is it to communicate with those people when you can't just jump on a Teams call or drop them an email? And so these are the types of challenges that help or that are common amongst deskless workers. And that's why we try to define them as such. But I don't enjoy terms like blue collar and white collar because I think it's a little bit outdated and it doesn't capture much nuance.
All right. So maybe what we can do is to get into some of that nuance, Caroline, just to talk about, some of the realities. I think one of the big things that we have spoken about on a number of occasions on this platform, and we've been following it for, over 2 years now, is the cost of living crisis that a lot of South Africans, find themselves in. We keep talking about consumer pressure, and that consumer pressure doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? It's one of those experiences and one of the most interesting thing about the economic moment we're having right now is that cost of living crisis is something that's being felt all across the world. It's not something that's limited to maybe just one region of, one country or one region of a continent. It's literally across the world. Everyone has been facing high inflation, high interest rates, higher transport charges, just higher prices for food and all of this stuff. For deskless workers, what are the specific things that are affecting, typically facing, deskless workers? I think you had started alluding to some of the things, like transport and, shifts and that type of thing.
So I love that you compared us to the rest of the world, because it's absolutely true that many other economies are facing cost of living crises at the moment. I think what sets South Africa apart is a kind of another layer of challenges. So, for example, when you think of transport, the expense of transport in places like the UK, it is also very expensive. But if you look at a South African who's earning a wage of 6,000 Rand, their transport can cost them up to 1,200 Rand just for that individual to get to work every month. That is a very substantial portion of their wages. But then there's a compounding factor, which is obviously crime, right? So when you are considering transport, you consider not only cost, but you consider safety. So for example, again, a security officer must get to work to start their shift at 6 a.m. They often arrive at work at 5:30 a.m. That probably means a 3 a.m. wake up. And depending on where you live, which is typically far out, which is another issue in South Africa, you have to consider your safety as well as the cost of that transport. And then your manager phones you the next day and says, hey, I need you to actually come on night shift tomorrow. And so that means you are at 4 p.m., you're starting to make your way to work for a 6 p.m. shift start, and then you're working overnight. And so the compounding is not only the cost of transport, but also the safety of the various transport routes that you could take. So that's one example of where we are different from the rest of the world and where we have to take these things into consideration.
I know that a number of corporates, for example, have interventions in place around, this specific issue, providing transport, where they can, shuttles, that type of thing, to and from work, especially for, people that have shifts that are outside of, let's say, your normal taxi hours, that type of thing. But maybe you could help us, since you guys have done, some of the research. Is this something that is in the majority or minority, of the deskless experience?
You're 100% right, and it is one of the most powerful benefits that employers can offer their employees. It's difficult to say whether it's in the majority or minority, because we see in sectors like mining, for example, it is quite common to provide transport because those work areas are often quite far out, and they also can be varied. person's working on one shaft versus another shaft from one week to the next. We also see it quite often in things like the hospitality industry where the hours are weird. The issue comes in where there are lower margin businesses that simply don't have the bandwidth to offer those types of things. So I know in the security industry, quite often there's no transport offered. And those are the people who do start work at 6 a.m. in the morning. And because of the fact that wages are set for that industry by a government entity, and tender competition is very stiff because that labor is relatively commodified, it means it becomes very difficult to offer a benefit like that. But transport is listed as one of the top three stressors of deskless workers. And so if there is any way to provide that, employers should really look into it if they can.
Out of interest, right, for companies, businesses that do offer that type of thing, is there any incentive on government side, you know, to say, oh, you're providing this benefit to your workers, we are going to meet you, you know, at this point? Or are the companies that are taking on that type of responsibility sort of, you know, doing it, you know, out of their own pocket?
I must say, I'm not sure if there are incentives available, but I know that it is a massive cost for those employers. And so it's sometimes prohibitive, regardless of whether there's a benefit to it. And presumably it gets classified as some kind of fringe benefit to employees. But it becomes very difficult if you're in an industry that just simply doesn't support the extra expenditure.
All right. So we've spoken about transport. We've spoken about cost of living. What else is happening in this world?
I think one of the most important things for us to understand is how our financial system is set up to support employees like this. So as we all know, many employed people in South Africa support large households of people because of how many unemployed people there are and the lack of jobs in South Africa. And that does mean that even if you are earning a living wage, you have very little margin for error. And what often happens then is if you have an unexpected expense in the month and you run out of money, you are forced to go to a loan shark or a registered lender that charges interest rates that are absolutely exorbitant. And so we, in our time in this industry, have come across countless workplaces where a so-called loan shark is actually operating inside the workplace. And this has a very deep impact on employees. So if I have a medical expense, for example, because my child is sick this month, and I have to spend, say, 300 Rand on medicines or a doctor's appointment, for example, and I borrow that from a coworker, that is a loan shark arrangement. And quite often, the interest rate would be up to 50% for just 1 or 2 weeks, which is a crazy amount if you translate that into an APR rate. That's the first thing. The second thing, which often employers don't know, is that if I'm unable to repay that, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay home from work so that I don't encounter that loan shark in my workplace. And so that indirectly affects the employer. And I see you laughing about this. It's a situation that we've encountered at almost 100% of the employers. In fact, when we started to introduce the earned wage access product at a few employers, we've had people shouting across the room, now we don't have to borrow money from you anymore, because there is almost always a loan shark within the workplace. So one of the solutions that we've come across, and we offer it as an organization, is earned wage access, which essentially allows a person to draw a portion of their wages early. So if you and I get paid at the end of the month, technically our employer owes us money throughout the month, but we wait until the end of the month. And so this system allows employees to draw down portions of what they've already earned, but more frequently in the month. So they're getting to choose how often they get paid. And that avoids getting into that debt cycle, having to stay away from work, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a very deep problem in our financial system, that there's no way for employees to absorb even a small financial hit in the month. Because if you can imagine that 50% interest rate, it's very difficult to get out of that. And if I need more money next month, I just get into a deeper and deeper hole.
You know what's interesting, Caroline, is that I have covered a number of earned wage platforms, you know, over time, particularly in the startup space, because a lot of them tend to be raising funds. or they have a technology platform of some sort that they have, and they're raising money against that platform. So it's been a very interesting, you know, space to actually observe over time. And maybe you can give us a sense of some of the nitty-gritties, because one of the biggest, what's the word I'm looking for? One of the biggest criticisms around that is that it might not be a loan shark arrangement, but you're sort of pushing a person's earnings, you know, back, right? Because they've now drawn into what they've already earned before payday. So if they're already in a hole at a particular day in the month, chances are, you know, that is something that is potentially repeatable. But in terms of some of the realities around earned wage access, what's actually happening in that space?
Yeah, I mean, it's great that you ask that, because these types of products should always be treated with skepticism. The issue, again, as I highlighted in our financial system, is that people will run out of money and they need transport money to get to work. So the average person is probably paying at least 80 Rand in their transport per day. And if they run out of money, they either sacrifice their day's wages for that day, or they borrow money from a loan shark, or one of the registered lenders that still charges rates that are absolutely exorbitant. I don't think it's any secret that many of these lenders charge lower interest but much higher fees, which ends up, if calculated into an APR, being an absolutely ridiculous amount of money. The difference with earned wage access is that it's impossible to get into a cycle, because you do pay a small fee, but that fee is deducted immediately at your next payday. So this is not a loan and it's not a term loan of any kind. And so if you imagine that I need 300 Rand extra and I will pay about 20 Rand in fees for an earned wage access transaction, and I'll probably pay about 150 Rand in fees for any other type of transaction. But then if I don't pay it off, that amount compounds. It affects my credit record, et cetera. With earned wage access, that amount is immediately deducted off your next salary, and then you start afresh the next month. So there's the sense of it never being longer than whenever your next paycheck comes in. I think it would also interest you to know that the majority of people do not choose to use earned wage access. So whenever we talk to employers about this, they think it will be like opening a floodgate. And actually, the usage rate is somewhere between 35 and 40% of employees, even though they have access to that 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So many employees are choosing to manage their funds in other ways, but those who do run into trouble have this safer option. It does cost them money, but it's impossible to get into a debt cycle through that. And so we are not in the position to say that this is a silver bullet to solve everybody's financial problems, but it's a way of avoiding getting into deeper financial issues that I think is incredibly effective.
No, it is true. And like you said, the reality is the fact that, so many workers in South Africa are running out of money before payday. So I guess it's to use the word that you used just now, what is the safer option, for you in the market? I won't lie, it is surprising that stat that you gave to say 30 to 40% of people that at least you guys are offering that service to actually take it up, because if I was to draw a parallel, you're right, around this cost of living crisis that we have, we saw just how big of a take up we've seen around the new two-pot retirement system and all the drawdowns of that system, and that it's anticipated to grow even further. So I guess it's a sign that, people in South Africa are looking for that way to access, some of those extra funds. So I do find it an interesting, an interesting duality. Obviously, there's completely different sets of considerations on both sides. But I guess at the heart of it being the fact that people are under such financial strain.
And I think the two-pot is a perfect example of how there is a lot of nuance there. So if somebody is in deep and severe debt and they do have access to some funds from the two-pot system, that can be an unbelievably good financial decision for them to take, to withdraw a portion of that money, have the rest of it stay in their fund, and pay off that debt that's going to accumulate enormous interest over the coming months and years. And so it's not always a bad thing when somebody makes use of the two-pot system. In fact, that's what it's intended for, to make sure that you keep some save for your retirement, but that you're able to address some of your current debts if you need to. But something else about the two-pot system that has frustrated us, because we've had this experience with, we currently serve 140,000 deathless workers in South Africa, is that a huge portion of why people have withdrawn is because they are misinformed. And many of the funds have tried to provide this type of information to them. But it remains very difficult to communicate simply with this group of people, which we call deathless workers. And part of that is because, as I said earlier, they don't use things like email. It's not good enough to send a quick email or a flyer out to people. There needs to be a concerted education campaign on a platform that these people use regularly. And that's a big frustration. So it's another opportunity, again, for employers to provide better services to their employees simply by informing them.
One of the things that I'm now curious about is to say, with almost every item that we've spoken about today, Caroline, we've sort of spoken about some of the, I guess, interventions or solutions that are coming out either from HR profession itself or, from financial services or, government, to try and help, whether it's the transport systems we've just spoken about, two-pot, all of this. What else or what other solutions are employers coming up with to sort of cater to deskless workers a little bit better, in the current market? Like we said, we've spoken about earned wage access, to try and counter the trend around the loan sharks. We've spoken about transport access. We've spoken about two parts. What else are employers trying, or at least what other interventions are firms like GEM, recommending, to employers to say, perhaps this is a way that you can come to the table?
So I think one of the biggest themes that underpins everything we've talked about so far is communication. So again, imagine a security officer that gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning, gets on a bus, and then goes to a relatively remote security hut somewhere where there's no technology. That person's relying on their own mobile phone for any kind of communication. And then when do they get to their site, there's maybe a two-way radio that exists for them to communicate back with the control room at head office. So how do you do something? How do you offer that employee very basic training? How do you tell them, hey, don't come to work, there's been a flood, or there's taxi violence, for example? How do you even do something as simple as sending them their payslip? So communication is probably the single biggest challenge with deskless workers. And then again, you and I may not relate to that because we may have things like Slack or Teams on our phones. We have our emails with us in our pocket wherever we go. Somebody can give us a call at any time, and we probably have uninterrupted access to data and airtime. And so one of the solutions we've looked at is WhatsApp. And I think people have traditionally underestimated the enormous power of a platform where already 95% of South Africans are. And so with the very latest technology coming out of WhatsApp, you can use what they call the WhatsApp Cloud API, and you can build platforms on that allows you to communicate with people on a platform where they already are. So you hear people talking about Africa is a chat first type economy where people don't necessarily have a desktop computer. And so they do everything on their mobile phones. But often people's minds jump immediately to apps, but apps are very data heavy. They differ according to what device you use. They need to be updated, and they usually need consistent access to the internet. Whereas WhatsApp, people are already communicating with their friends and family. So that's one of the channels that we have chosen. And we're seeing engagement rates higher than any industry standard that you can imagine. In some cases, again, where you're talking about manufacturing workers or security guards that are at the 5,000 to 8,000 Rand salary bracket, which is near the bottom, you've got something like 96% sign-up rates in many cases. And you're able to send out training materials. You're able to accept queries from your employees that way. And so it bridges this really empty space that exists in terms of communicating with deskless workers.
When using that specific channel, a lot of different industries have attacked WhatsApp in different ways, right? To try and meet the problem that you've identified, the fact that the cost of data is expensive, but most of the time people will at least make a plan to make sure that they are online when it comes to WhatsApp, or at least have something that they can check their WhatsApps periodically, type of thing. So because of the take up, do you, without calling it a silver bullet though, how effective of a channel do you see it, or on the spectrum are we saying that this is the most effective thing that we found so far as a mass communication tool?
Through our experience, it is by far the most effective, and that is obviously context specific for deskless workers in South Africa. So if you can imagine, for example, a franchise group of fast food restaurants, we have plenty of those on our platform. So there's a kind of a head office that deals with all the wages and the scheduling, et cetera. But then there's 9 or 10 or 20 fast food stores where the staff are every single day. We launched our initial version, which was the Payslips product. And we got feedback the same day that this one person said they'd never received a payslip in their lives before. And that's because they were being printed at the head office and then put into a car and distributed over the next week or so to the different stores, because that was the only way they could get their payslips to their staff. Staff don't have email addresses, and so it's got to be printed. And that's extraordinary, because that is a prerequisite. That's a requirement of employers to be producing those documents and to prove that they've given those to employees. And so you're getting a situation where it benefits employers from a compliance standpoint and employees, because those payrolls of hourly workers run at about a 5% error rate. So if you or I received our payslip as an hourly worker, you need to be checking that payslip that you've received your overtime and that your hours recorded correctly. So this is a very simple problem that you can solve with technology, but it's got to be the right technology.
Mm. And outside of payslips, what else can people do on that platform? And someone who's listening might be like, okay, fine, we're talking to GemHR. Maybe you could tell us, is it called GemHR, on WhatsApp?
It is, yes. So we enter into relationship with the employer, obviously. And so it runs as a closed database. It's not open to the public, the WhatsApp channel, and it's very secure in that sense. There's a lot of things that you can do through there. One of the biggest findings of the Deskless Worker Pulse was the ambition of deskless workers who are in junior roles to move up in their organizations. And one of the things that we worked on with one of our clients was, this was a client in the aviation industry that has very skilled jobs. You have to have very specific certifications if you are working in baggage handling, for example, or you working as part of cleaning airplanes, etc. But these are big groups of deskless workers that work at our airports. And they wanted to recruit people from within their organization to move up and to improve their skills. So what they would do is they would post a job advertisement in one of their sort of communal break rooms, and they would find that somebody who wanted the job would take the advert down and chuck it in the bin and then apply for the job, so that there wouldn't be any other applicants. And it sounds like a silly thing, but of course these jobs are lucrative and it's competitive in that industry. And so what they did was they sent out a job ad via our WhatsApp channel to their 2,000 employees, and their applications went 10x overnight, because everyone was having an equal opportunity to see this. And again, you're talking about a shift worker industry where someone starts at 2 a.m. and they may go home at 9 a.m. in the morning. And if the job ad gets posted at 10 a.m. and they don't get an opportunity to apply, then they've missed an opportunity. And at the same time, the employer has missed an opportunity to get the absolute best person in that role. It's small examples like that where the right communication platform provides equal access to all your employees to information that's critical in order for them to do their job, but also advance in their career.
All right. That's how we end off and wrap up today's discussion. It has been fascinating, you know, understanding what's actually happening in the world of deskless workers. I think a couple of definitions that came through is that we're talking about people that whose work is typically shift based, and typically don't have in certain cases you don't have a set place of work. Yeah, you know, that may change. You know, about where you need to show up. And also at the fact that, at the most basic level, we're talking about people that are outside of the knowledge work industry, people that are not sitting in front of laptops, you know, all day. And, people for whom, a number of different factors, have been feeding in, such as your transport costs, such as communication, which is one of the big things that we've ended up talking about. One of the big realities that Caroline was giving to us is the fact that on the financial side there's a lot of strain, and today we were getting a sense of how that strain is playing out in the workplace, and how some of the trends around loan sharks, for example, are being countered by offering options such as earned wage access, and also at the same time getting a sense of some of the things that some employers are doing to sort of ease the burden around stress. But the fact that, the reality is that a lot of those facilities come at quite a huge cost. So for your lower margin businesses or for your smaller operators, that's not going to be something that that they can do. But obviously, we mentioned the communication piece, spent quite a bit of time talking about WhatsApp as an effective channel to communicate with people, because, Caroline just saying that in a lot of cases, you're talking about workers that don't even have an email address, but you need to be able to send out mass communication around, times of work, shifts, payroll, and also at the same time, just simple communication around your materials, for training, that type of thing, and also job opportunities. That's also a very competitive space, and this is one of the ways that you level the playing field, so that people don't play games such as taking down job adverts, in a canteen or outside the office. So that's been it. We were talking to one of the co-founders and chief product officer over at GemHR, that is Caroline van der Merwe. Caroline, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madiwe. Much appreciated.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.